Drago and Chime here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI. That was Kevin O'Connor of Yahoo Sports, now Mego, correct?
Yahoo Sports.
He joined Mego and Lyons, filling in for Jones and Keefe the other day.
Yeah, he was awesome. Find it on the Odyssey app, iHeartRadio app, because we're available on there now.
Yes, we are. Anywhere you get your podcast as well, you can pull up the Jones and Keefe show, and that should be there for you from Thursday's show, correct?
I think it was Thursday's show. Honestly, I've been on every day for the last year, it feels like, so I'm not complaining. It's just I don't remember.
Now, do you believe Kevin when he says that Bill Chisholm will do what is kind of best for this franchise and allowing them to, you know, stay competitive and build? I mean, this season, it feels kind of like a wash just with Tatum being out the entire year anyways. It feels like they're going to be competitive, but not, you know, as competitive as they have been in the last few years. But maybe once Tatum comes back, will they be empowered to be super competitive for that title and spend all that money again?
I hope so. New owners make everybody nervous.
Always.
Always. It doesn't matter the league or really the situation. New ownership, especially when the Grosbeck ownership has been as successful as they have been overall, it just makes people nervous because you don't know what's coming. You don't know if there's going to be some kind of new owner derangement syndrome that sometimes other teams have, where it's like either the guy doesn't want to spend it all or he's meddling or she's meddling and they want to go and try to control a lot that front offices are doing. You just don't know what you're going to get. And so that was me asking Kevin O'Connor. I just kind of wanted to get a sense of if he's heard anything more about Bill Chisholm besides that he's this North Shore guy who is a lifelong Celtics fan and had some backing to buy the team. Like, that's really all we know about him,
sure,
right? He was at pretty much all the games through the playoff run as far as it went. And I believe that he's a fan, and I'm hopeful that he's going to get back to spending after they get under the second apron this season and take this little kind of like, you know, developmental, experimental year, as it's being categorized by a lot of people. I don't worry that he's not going to spend.
Okay.
Honestly, because when you look at when he bought the team, the price tag for the following year was going to be $500 million. And yes, they did get under the second apron. And now it's kind of like a sliding doors moment. We don't know how aggressive they would have been with cutting the spending if Jason Tatum hadn't been injured. I know some people think that Jason Tatum's injury gives them the cover to be aggressive in cutting spending.
Yep.
But I think they're going to go back to it. I think that everything that I've seen slash heard indicates that Chisholm is very much in the mold of the previous Celtics ownership group. Whenever this changes hands, that it's going to be a very good faith effort to continue running the team as it's been run. And empowering Brad Stevens is a major part of that. Also, keeping Brad Stevens around. Like, there's empowering Brad Stevens, keeping your hands off for the most part of the basketball moves and letting the basketball people handle that. But there's also keeping it an enticing place for someone like Brad Stevens, for Brad Stevens to continue working in the front office and giving him the flexibility, the creativity, and allowing him to form his vision and execute the vision.
Yeah, because that's exactly what he did prior, right? He kind of went from coaching to front office and immediately started to build this team in his image, and then found a coach that would kind of fit directly into that image. First, he thought it was Ime, and then he was like, you know what? We had to get rid of that for other reasons. And then Joe Mazzulla kind of stepped in and was like, yeah, this is exactly what we want to do. We want to play the three ball game. We want to do it just like this. And he acquired talent to kind of fit that vision. And so you hope that is, as time goes on here, once Tatum comes back from that Achilles injury, that the same thing is still applicable. Like, he wants to, he has a vision, he knows the direction in which he wants to push this team, and then he's able and allowed to do that. And I hope that that's the case. I feel like it is. Like, it feels to me, and this is just, you know, again, my completely uneducated sense of it, that a lot of the movement this offseason is a reaction to Tatum's Achilles injury. Like, if Tatum was healthy, even if they lose to the Knicks, they would cut some pieces, but they would have done their best to keep a legitimately title competitive team on the court, whatever it cost. And I very much feel that. Like, I very much feel that they might have only gotten rid of one of Drew Holiday or Kristaps Porzingis and then found some kind of, you know, sneaky way to either sneak under the second apron or whatever, or just dealt with the penalties of it so that they can continue to compete for titles.
I don't think that they were going to stay in the apron, second apron again. I really don't. But that doesn't mean that they would be as aggressive in the moves for financial flexibility as they are right now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think about, you know, I see texts coming in now saying Bill Chisholm's not going to spend. You don't, based on what? Because of the text line, because of how he made his money? How do you think most of these people make their money?
They're all super rich. Like, it doesn't matter how they made their money. Like, it's just,
a lot of it is like, you know, private equity and hedge funds and Bain Capital type business, like whatever. That's where a lot of this comes from. It doesn't mean that he's going to be slashing and burning the Celtics roster and franchise for the next 10 years.
No, I look at it. I mean, we've seen two really good examples of it in the NFL recently, right? We saw the Panthers ownership come leave, and then we got a new owner in David Tepper, who sucks. He meddles. He's lighting things on fire. He's firing coaches after 1 or 2 years. Like, he has his fingers in everything, and it's terrible. It is a disaster. Whereas the Washington Commanders, they fire a really bad old owner, get a brand new owner in. He just gives the money and wants to sit back and is a fan. And the GM and the front office and the coaches take care of everything. And the team is in the NFC Championship game in the first year under new ownership, right? And so I think so far, in the very limited amount of time we've seen Bill Chisholm, he doesn't feel very David Tepper-y to me. And if that's the case, I think that the money will be spent in some way or another. He will allow Brad Stevens to kind of build the team in his image and allow that to kind of come to fruition.
He doesn't want to be the guy who comes in 2 years after and have 2 years after they win the championship, them being a team that's just perennially under the first apron, cheaping out, not spending, getting to a point where cornerstones of the team as they are now, like Jaylen Brown move on, or like Brad Stevens move on. And I'll say this for Wick Grosbeck, because I think at this time last year, when the news came out that how much share he had in the team and his father's investment in the team and why were they moving on and family planning and a lot of stuff came out. Like, for Wick, do you remember there was a story that came out in the 2023 Eastern Conference Finals, that there was a report that Wick went into the locker room and ripped into the team for the way that they were losing to the Miami Heat. And he still had Joe Mazzulla back as the head coach the following year. Now, you might think that that wasn't the right move at the time, but they won the championship the following year. So it was the right move.
100%.
It was the right move. Maybe you think somebody else could have coached the team. It was the right move for that year. And I think that that's an example of how he's put his trust in Brad Stevens and Brad Stevens' judgment, and it's led to good things. And I think that it is key for Chisholm to continue down that path, like to understand, and I think he does, that Brad Stevens is maybe, aside from Jason Tatum, the most important piece of the Celtics franchise right now. And so putting your trust in that and putting your trust in when to spend and when to be aggressive again, it's just very obvious, as you said, this offseason, because your superstar has this devastating injury, that it puts you in a position where it lines up with your, quote, financial flexibility goals.
Yeah, and it's just, I don't understand the people that are, you again, it's just like more people on the text line that are just like bottom line over lineup. I just don't understand how you can assume that that's the case with a guy you don't know.
There's frustration because they're cutting spending right now. But I quibble.
You knew this was coming.
Lot.
Wick told us on the Greg Hill Show, Wick said nobody stays in the second apron for more than 2 years. Nobody.
And I don't think that you can vilify new ownership.
No.
Like, if Wick was saying that to you guys because Chisholm and his group had communicated that to Wick, first of all, I don't think that the current ownership would want to sell to owners who they felt like was going to put them in a really bad position.
Agreed.
Because guess what? There were more groups than Bill Chisholm's group who were willing to pony up the $6 billion.
Especially when Wick wants to stay on as the governor. Like, this is also reflecting on him.
And Wick it seems like, I don't know if it's still the case, but it seemed like Wick wanted to buy back in.
Yeah.
Have a minority share in the group so he could still be part of ownership. I don't know if that's still the case. If you listen to the top of that clip from Kevin O'Connor, he said that he's not sure now because the championship window has changed so much over the last month and a half. But at the same time, like, I think that Chisholm is going to spend eventually. I think that that's the goal again. 100%. If you want to vilify anyone, don't vilify this specific new ownership group or the previous ownership group, because I don't think that they've earned anything that is that much negativity. Vilify the freaking CBA. Yeah. Because
it's stupid.
The further it goes on, the more it's going to irritate me. And not just because of what it's doing to the Celtics or the decisions that it's putting pressure on the Celtics to make. You're going to see it with OKC. You're going to see it with OKC in a couple years.
They're already giving massive contracts.
They have the Supermax contract that they gave to SGA. 100% earned it. You think that they're going to have another Supermax with Chet Holmgren and anybody else after that? Like, the CBA is going to most likely force a lot of teams into situations where you don't have two Supermax players.
Yeah.
And that sucks.
It's dumb. Especially when they're homegrown players, right? You drafted them. You did exactly what the NBA wants you to do. You found a great player in the draft. You developed him. You kept him here in your market. You made a great star of him. And they earned that contract. And now you're getting penalized
for it. Like, will you be in a position where you see a player like Jaylen Brown, who's not a top five player, but some years a top 15 player for sure, get a Supermax? I don't know. Like, I can't believe that everybody agreed to this. It certainly is beneficial to owners overall,
sure,
especially in smaller markets where they don't want to have to push and be competitive in terms of these skyrocketing salaries and putting themselves into a position where it's like baseball. I mean, this is basically like putting a cap on the league. But it just is, it's frustrating to me because I'm not a big fan of parity, and I don't think it's going to be beneficial to the league overall.
Yeah,
talked about that a lot.
If you were going to have these penalties, you might as well just have a cap and just like make it universal. Like, it's silly. You're penalizing these teams for drafting and developing good, talented players and finding other, you know, hidden gems. Like, I mean, You're penalizing the Celtics for finding and drafting Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, and then acquiring a guy like Derek White, and then he improves in your system, and then drafting a guy like Peyton Pritchard. Luckily his contract is small for now, but what kind of contract is he going to get when his time comes? Like, even him being a sixth man of the year is going to get a ridiculously high contract, and that is a contract the Celtics may not even be able to pay when the time comes.
Yeah, I think Peyton's on a pretty good contract for them right now. Derek White's contract is just the steal of
decade. The steal of the century.
So that alone, like, if you want to ask me what is Brad Stevens' most impressive move so far,
it's Derek White.
Some of the moves that he made last summer, he kind of lucked into Drew Holiday, and I think he would tell you that. Yeah. Drew Holiday becoming available from the Bucks was just, people did not see that happening because everyone thought that Lillard at that time was going to the Heat. But the Derek White trade was incredible. I mean, the way that it's aged is like a fine wine. On the other side, though, because I know we got to get to trending, I want to get into a column that Gary Washburn of the Boston Globe wrote, because I was on Early Edition with him the other night talking about the Damian Lillard move that may or may not be happening. And he poses a good argument that I'm very much in favor of, and points out something that I think is interesting about what Damian Lillard could bring to your team that I hadn't thought of before.
Awesome. We'll get to that. What Damian Lillard can bring to the Boston Celtics. 617-779-7937 if you want to weigh in. You can also text in as well. If you're not listening on the radio, if you're about to get out of your car, whatever, you can also listen to us on the Audacy app, AUDACY. You can download that in your app store. You can take it wherever you go, anywhere on your smartphone. You can play it on your smart speaker. We're also on the iHeart and TuneIn app as well now. But right now, Jacob is going to get you caught up with what is trending. Mecca and Scott here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Started talking Celtics here in the second hour of the program, taking you up until 1 o'clock today. Full four-hour program out of us, back-to-back days. So you're getting all the Mego and Shime you can handle. Mego's been on the radio all week, though.
Yeah.
Just crushing it left and right.
Shime, I got to tell you, I just read something that could be really upsetting to you.
Uh-oh.
We'll address it at 11.
Uh-oh.
It's Patriots related.
Oh, no.
it's a potential move that someone is describing for the Patriots, and it could be very upsetting for you.
Upsetting for me?
Very upsetting. I literally just read it. It came across the desk here, so to speak, and I was like, Shime is going to hate this. Don't worry, it's not Drake. I'll give you that much, because okay. I don't want you to go through the next half hour like panicking and wondering if something terrible is happening with Drake May. It's not that.
Okay.
But it's something else that I think could upset you.
It's not Travion Henderson, right?
No, but I'm not going to go any
further. That's fine.
I'm not going to go any further.
My two guys are okay. I'll hold out until 11.
Those are your two beautiful boys.
Those are my two beautiful boys. You're damn right.
Drake May and Travion Henderson.
They are like my children. Yes.
Who would be number three on that list?
Kyle Williams.
Okay.
Those are my
Don't worry,
my guys.
It's not Kyle Williams.
Woo! All right. The triplets are safe.
The triplets.
Good.
The triplets are going strong.
So there you go.
Of course, Damian Lillard has been a huge news item for the NBA this week because of the Bucks' bizarro move to decide to waive him and stretch his contract.
How insane was it that they couldn't find any kind of trade for him? Did you really expect him to get waived like this?
I thought that they were going to do something where they maybe tried to trade for like Bradley Beal or something like that, where they would find somebody where the relationship seems to be so bad for between the player and another franchise that it's like, hey, let's just swap this out, and it's kind of neutral for both sides.
Yeah, I found it so odd that the Boston Celtics were able to offload Kristaps Porzingis, who looked like a shell of himself in the playoffs this past season. And granted, the return was not very good, but like I felt like the Bucks could have done that with a guy like Damian Lillard, who still averaged 25 points a game last year. Like it was very odd to me.
Yeah, I think Porzingis, because it seemed like he had that strange post-viral syndrome or whatever they were calling it in the playoffs. Like that seems a much less serious injury than Damian Lillard. But Porzingis has this injury history.
Exactly.
So it's not like what the Celtics did there, I got to say, I think was more about a goal of the financial
dropping
situation.
Dropping the money, for sure.
And I thought that they were probably going to like try to explore hanging on to him through at least the first part of the regular season, because that would give them a starting big, which they don't appear to have on the roster right now.
Yeah.
And they could move him for a bigger return at the trade deadline. But who knows? Maybe there was incentive or pressure to get that move done earlier, get it off the books, especially when you have ownership changing hands. And I think we should probably expect that to be happening pretty soon this month, because now the NBA finals are over.
Yep.
The board of governors are going to sit down, approve the sale. That'll go through, and then we'll find out a lot more about how Chisholm's going to run the business here.
Awesome. Okay, so back to Damian Lillard.
Yes. So I was on TV with Gary Washburn the other night on NBC Sports Boston. We are both very much in favor of the Celtics signing Damian Lillard.
Absolutely.
We were on with the wonderful Kayla Burton, who doesn't like the idea because she thinks that it creates a logjam for guys like Jaylen Brown and Derek White in terms of getting their scoring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one ball, can everybody share it? Here's what Gary wrote the other day in the Boston Globe, and there were a couple points here that I hadn't actually put together yet, and I think are good salient points that I haven't made on my own, and I haven't heard a lot of other people make them. So Gary points out that Lillard is a free agent for the first time in his career, but his best chance at winning his long-desired championship is signing with the Celtics. According to an NBA source, Lillard would consider signing with the Celtics, and the Celtics are indeed interested.
Okay.
So mutual interest on both sides. We've
Love
now
that.
Heard that from Adam Himmelsbach. We've heard that from Gary Washburn. So a couple sources saying there's mutual interest. The possibility of a healthy Lillard joining Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Derek White, Peyton Pritchard, and a developing Ugo Gonzalez are intriguing for the 26-27 season. Lillard and Tatum can bond during their Achilles rehab. Lillard could serve as a veteran presence for this year's team, becoming a mentor for Portland native Peyton Pritchard.
Was it University of Oregon product?
For another Boston championship run.
Interesting.
I hadn't put that together, that Pritchard is, he's like a major Oregon guy.
Yeah.
And Dame was Mr. Portland for years.
Yeah, he took them to the Western Conference Finals in like 2018.
Like, rather than being a part of a logjam for somebody like Peyton Pritchard, if Pritchard is seemingly being, you know, developed into a starting point guard, having Dame there on the bench behind him, because I think that's where he'll be even when he comes back healthy, could be like a major mentorship point for Peyton Pritchard. I actually like that.
I think that's a great idea. I mean, it's really interesting. The more you think about it, it's like, okay, like, yeah, I can see why you would want a guy like Damian Lillard to help mentor Peyton Pritchard. I wouldn't say their games are identical by any means, but I see the similarities. I see the shooting ability is clearly like one of them. And I just think Damian Lillard would be like a positive impact on the court overall. Just again, like the scoring ability of Damian Lillard is ridiculous. We've seen him go off for an insane amount of points multiple times in his career. Like, this is a guy who, when he's hot, will shoot from anywhere on the court. And I also think, too, that even if his mobility is limited by the Achilles recovery, like, again, this, you don't just, like, lose that shooting ability. It's something that you can kind of just figure out. Even if you have to become more of just a spot-up and, you know, catch-and-shoot guy, like, I think that's something that Lillard would be able to adapt
to. So here's two more points from Gary, because some people say, why the hell would you need Lillard to be a mentor to Peyton Pritchard? Why wouldn't you want it? I mean, Lillard carried those Portland teams way further than they ever
should have been.
Had any business going in the playoffs.
1,000%.
I mean, he's a real dog. There is little risk to this move, Washburn writes. Lillard would earn the mid-level, and if he becomes unhappy or if it proves to be a poor fit, the Celtics can always trade him. The team has been searching for a frontline point guard, after missing on Kemba Walker, and Lillard, even at his advanced age, could fill that role because his game is based on movement and savvy, not athleticism. So to your point, the game should be at least pretty good coming off of the Achilles.
Sure.
It's not so dependent on his athleticism. And signing Lillard would serve as an indication to Celtics faithful that this team is serious about returning to contention in 2026-27, making this regression season more digestible. Stevens has never been afraid to take chances, to chase veteran players, and the Celtics culture is a good selling point. I don't love the Celtics culture piece.
Yeah, that
feels
fine,
a little bit too much like a Heat culture,
yeah.
Something that I think players don't care tremendously about.
No.
Besides the money, but it would be like a nice indication, not just to the fan base, but to the team of, hey, we still have this medium-term goal.
Yeah.
It's not about having financial flexibility for 2028. Look, after this season, and as you guys are developing and experimenting this season, we'll be back in it the year after that. Tatum will come back. Dame will be with us healthy here. And we will be championship contenders again. I think that would be a really good indication.
I agree. Like, it's just, it makes so much sense that your starting roster in 26-27 is Lillard, White, Brown, Tatum, insert big man here, right? Like, that to me is a legitimate championship contender. And being able to be part of that mid-level exception as Damian Lillard would be, it just makes it so easy for the Celtics to kind of navigate the financial structure however they see fit, right? If he fits, great. He plays all the time, and he's not counting against your luxury tax. If he doesn't fit, it's a super easy trade because other teams are going to be like, oh, it's the mid-level exception. The Bucks are still paying him. That's the beauty of this, is Milwaukee is on the hook for his entire contract. You're paying him like $5 million to $6 million a year.
And most importantly, from a financial perspective, it's not going against the tax.
Bingo.
It doesn't count towards the tax.
So you can still put that money towards a legitimate big man.
And it's a small contract that they would pay, but in another way, it also shows that ownership is saying, we do care about the tax
yep.
penalties, and we don't want to be repeaters, and we want to spend when Tatum's healthy, but we can spend $5 million in salary.
Yeah.
Like, we can do that, guys. Don't worry. We can do that. We need to look at the tax, and because if you're saying 5.6 is too rich because of the salary, not going against the cap, against the tax, those are two different things, then you can't blame the CBA.
Yeah.
Then you can't point at the CBA and say, the CBA is crushing all of us. It's not fair. It's hard to have two Supermax players and then add players like this. But if it doesn't count against the tax, then you can say, look at us. We want to spend. And when it doesn't count against the tax, we're going to go out and get players, especially one whose contract is being being paid by crazy Milwaukee out there.
It feels like such a win for the ownership in the front office if they were able to get Damian Lillard, because it's a clear sign we are still going to compete for titles. But without having to spend that exorbitant amount of money. It's one of those like sneaky ways to kind of get around it, but still show that you have investment and you plan on being competitive and you plan on competing, because you're bringing in a guy who historically has been a huge point scorer and has taken teams that didn't deserve to be places to the playoffs and beyond. Like, this is a guy who literally took a 2018 Pacers team, Trailblazers team to the Western Conference Finals. Like, he basically did it by himself. And that's how good Damian Lillard can be at his peak. And, of course, he's not going to be that, but he's still going to be a really, really good basketball player. And he's not going to have to be the number one option. You're going to have Tatum, Brown, and Derek White still on this roster in 26-27. Adding a guy like Lillard to that just gives you another dimension and allows you to just kind of, again, be multiple in the way in which you play.
Yeah, I see some texts coming in. Lillard and Peyton Pritchard are both defensive liabilities. Lillard post-injury will be even more suspect. They will look beautiful in regular season and get victimized in the NBA postseason. There is one thing that Brad Stevens said in the press conference immediately after the loss to the Knicks. He said that the postseason is clearly way more physical than the regular season.
Way more.
And that was something that they didn't contend well with this year. And so I think that there is a fair point there.
Yeah.
If you're looking at the team and you're saying, wait, you can't have these undersized point guards who are going to be turnstiles on defense. Honestly, I can't say, like, I've watched a ton of Dame's defense over the last 2 years.
Yep.
He certainly isn't a top defender, but I think Peyton Pritchard, that's a little bit of an outdated look at him. I know in the 22 finals,
he's improving.
He couldn't hang defensively with the Warriors at that time, and the Warriors look like the tougher team. His defense has improved a ton. Like, he has gotten physically much stronger, and I don't think that it's fair to categorize him that way. But I understand if you're saying, I want to bring in players who will bring that physicality once you're contenders again, and Dame Lillard doesn't fit into that. Like, that's a fair enough reason. I'm just telling you guys, like, if you're like, no, I don't want him because he's in his mid-30s, and I don't want him because he's coming off an Achilles, the risk is so low.
Yeah, there is no risk.
It's an experiment in which you're playing with house money. It's found money. Like, it is so low. You'll probably be paying $5-something million, and it doesn't count against the tax, so it's not taking away from your ability to pay for a big, which you sorely need right now.
Yeah, and I think even by adding Damian Lillard then doesn't exclude you from going out and finding a different point guard that may be a little bit more physical and better defensively, right, for the playoffs. Because I understand, if that's your argument, right, you are going to have to see a guy like Jalen Brunson when Halliburton comes back, a guy like Tyrese Halliburton, Donovan Mitchell in the Eastern Conference playoffs. Those are really good scoring point guards that you're going to have to square up against. And if your only hope is Derek White because Lillard and Pritchard prove to be liabilities on defense, then I understand the argument. But just because you sign Lillard doesn't preclude you from going and getting a better defensive guard.
Yeah, and I see the text line says, okay, Mega, what's the reason the Celtics will give when they don't go get him? Probably that he wants to play for the Heat.
Yeah, or he wants to play elsewhere. Yeah.
He wants to live in Miami.
Yep.
That's where he's wanted to be for years. And maybe he's also just feeling incredibly bummed out, as anybody would be, after spending 2 years in Milwaukee having blood clots and an Achilles tear. And he's like, I really just want to be on South Beach.
I want to go out into the sun in South Beach. Like, that's the thing. If he clearly ends up in Miami, it's not because he... The reason he goes there is because he wants to be in Miami, not because he wants
to win.
It's
a lifestyle choice.
Yeah, 100%. If he wants to win, the Celtics seem like the clear option. And so that's kind of the difference.
Incredibly a lifestyle choice. I know we need to take a break on the other side, because I was thinking about Brad Marchand this week.
Ooh, okay.
Re-signing with the Panthers.
Yes, he did.
And being there for 6 freaking years.
Yes,
having
he is.
A contract.
$5.5 million a year, I believe.
43. Is he one of these athletes who we think of, the one who got away, as the great Bob LaBelle once said, why can't we get players like that? I have a list of, like, why can't we get players like that, guys?
Okay.
And I want you to rank who are the most regretful departures in Boston sports last 50 years.
Okay, are they just in free agency or are there trades here as well?
No, they can be trades as well.
Oh, okay,
yeah,
perfect.
So it'll
awesome.
Get really fun.
Awesome.
Tell me if I'm missing anybody here.
We'll do. 617-779-7937. We will get into that next. The Why Can't We Have Players Like That segment here on Mego and Shime on Boston Sports Original WEEI. Mego and Shime here on Boston Sports Original WEEI. It's now time to discuss guys that got away. I wish we could have guys like that on this team, players. From the past here in the city of Boston, Mego's got a whole list, and we're going to talk about them. We'll rank them. We'll see if she forgot anybody in particular. Mego, who do you got first?
Okay, so these are ones that I think definitely should make the list.
Okay.
And then I have a couple contenders who I would say I'm waffling on.
Okay.
Or like TBD. And I would throw Brad Marchand in there because I do feel like Marchand... I know people got excited earlier this week. They thought maybe he would come back here because there was interest from the Bruins. Mm-hmm. They were open to having him back. I just never really felt like that was realistic. I said that in the moment, so please don't say that I'm just like saying it after the fact. It would have been backsliding. It wouldn't make sense for where the Bruins are as an organization. Now, I don't love what the Bruins did in free agency, but at the same time, it doesn't really make sense, especially when he was the captain here and then you trade him away and he's on a third line on the championship team and then comes back here and is he the captain again? Like I don't think that would work.
That just wouldn't have worked, but it is when you see him play in the playoffs for the Florida Panthers, it is one of those moments like, man, I wish we could have that. But then again, you'd need to be in the playoffs for that to matter, unfortunately.
Okay. So my first one is very recent, Nathan Eovaldi.
Yeah, 100%.
Walking in free agency after 2022. I just think that was an unforced error, really, letting him walk. He's been a monster since. He's having a great season, and I would love for him to still be on the Red Sox instead of you trying to search through the desert for your rotation every offseason, it feels like.
Yeah, 100%. When you look back, it's like, oh, man, imagine if he had been in this rotation, you wouldn't have had to bring in Walker Buehler. And then you'd have a legitimate dominant rotation in guys like Garrett Crochet, Nate Eovaldi, Lucas Giolito finally coming around, Brian Bello's getting better. Like, you're looking at a pitching rotation that you can really be proud of, and unfortunately, he is not here.
Okay, the next one, Chauncey Billups. So,
interesting.
Because
okay.
I'm a bit of a hoops head.
Yep.
Of course, you selected him third overall in the 97 draft. This is doubly bad because not only did Chauncey go on to be a five-time NBA All-Star and NBA champion with the Detroit Pistons in that 04 team, but he couldn't get along with Rick Pitino, and that's the main reason that they traded him away just after his rookie season, along with Dee Brown to the Raptors in exchange for Kenny Anderson and Popeye Jones. Like, this is not a real trade that should have ever happened in the NBA.
Popeye Jones, father of Seth Jones, Stanley Cup champion.
Really?
Look at that little piece of trivia.
Okay, nugget from Jacob
over
there.
Okay, Jacob chiming in.
I like that.
I like it. Yeah, so Chauncey Billups.
Interesting.
That was just an abysmal trade. That was a very... Those were dark times for the Celtics.
Brutal.
Thank God they moved on from them, but those were dark times.
Yes.
In that vein, after they had done... Danny Ainge had done the miraculous putting together of the big three for that 08 championship team... The Kendrick Perkins trade, when he traded Kendrick Perkins and Nate Robinson.
Yep.
Danny Ainge has said publicly that he thinks that was like the worst move that he ever made because he did that midseason. That team had, after that, it felt like the chemistry of that team just really fell apart. I think Perk was a really emotional guy and in a good way. Like, he was a glue guy for that team in a lot of ways, and they were just never the same after that. Beyond that, these are the two locks that, of course, you have to have. Mookie Betts trade.
100%.
Never, ever, 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 ever going to look like the Red Sox won that.
No.
Unless something insanely horrible comes out that Mookie is like some kind of monster in his personal life. There's no other way.
And he seems like the nicest guy.
Yeah, of course. I'm saying I don't think that there's any realistic way that you could say that the Red Sox... will have ever won the Mookie Betts trade.
Never.
And this is in recent history, so we're not going back to Babe Ruth, guys.
No. This is like right around 2000 on, because Chauncey Billups was just before 2000.
Number one, Brady.
Yeah, has to be Tom Brady.
Tom Brady. Walking in free agency.
Yep.
Yeah. Tom Brady goes on to win a championship with Tampa. Of course, we all know. and retires again, and he should have retired a Patriot. And
100%.
Maybe you look at it, and of course, like, I don't want to get into all of everything that was happening in 2019 and Bill Belichick and Robert Kraft, but he wouldn't have won another championship here. Fine. But it still sucks that he retired as a Buck and not a Patriot.
I completely agree. That one, to me, the top two were without a doubt Tom Brady and Mookie Betts.
So I have a couple other candidates.
Cool. Okay. I have a couple as well that came to mind.
You do yours, and then I'll tell you who else I would add to this
So
list.
One baseball-related one that immediately came to mind for me was Kyle Schwarber, a guy who in 3.5 years post-Red Sox has hit 157 home runs. He has had seasons of 46, 47, 38, and so far, halfway through this season, already has 26 home runs in Major League Baseball this year. So, like, that's a guy that the city loved in that playoff run that they made, the one successful playoff run outside of 2018 Alex Cora has had. Everyone loved Kyle Schwarber, Kyle from Waltham. You let him walk, and he went off, and he's hit 100 and almost 60 dongs in 3.5 years.
It's wild that, in retrospect, that's the only good trade deadline that the Red Sox have had this decade.
Yeah.
That's the only good trade deadline. And in the time, like in the moment, we all felt underwhelmed by it.
Yes.
We thought they should have done more.
Very much so. Yeah, 100%. I mean, we've been thinking they should be doing more at the deadline every year, and they just
never
do. Yeah,
but that was the best trade deadline that they've executed this decade.
Yep. So the other name that I had here as well, much smaller extent than a guy like Tom Brady, but Jacoby Myers is a guy that you look at, and it's like, oh my God, we could use a receiver like that on this team.
Yes.
And you just, like,
and he keeps improving out in Vegas.
He's been great.
He just had a 1,000-yard season.
Yeah, and that was playing alongside Davante Adams for a long time, too. He was playing great. Now he's the number one receiver in an offense with Geno Smith, who, if you saw him in Seattle at all, loves to throw the football a lot. And he lit the Patriots up last year in particular. And so I think Jacoby Myers is going to have a lot of opportunities in that Vegas offense next season.
I didn't even think about the one that because I was trying to come up with more Patriots ones besides Tom Brady. For so long, Bill Belichick's calling card was moving on earlier rather than later and being able to read when a player had hit his peak and was on the downturn. But he was so wrong on Jacoby Myers, and adding insult to injury that you get Juju Smith-Schuster in the Jacoby Myers replacement, and he was so clearly from the jump not healthy with that knee and was just pretty wholly unproductive. It was like that's when you really knew, okay, it's not just the drafting with Bill. Like, he's not reading this talent stuff overall, at least offensively, whatsoever anymore.
Yeah, the one other Patriots-related one I had was Chandler Jones, and it's hard to say I wish I had that guy because the Patriots went on to win 2 Super Bowls in the 4 years post Chandler Jones. But in those 4 years, he had 60 sacks. That's a 15 sack a season average. He was a 2-time All-Pro over the next 4 years post-Patriots.
TJ Watt numbers.
Yeah, so like this is a guy. I mean, he had 19 sacks in 2019. He had 11, 17, 13, 19. Those were his 4 seasons post-New England. It's a guy you would always love to have a pass rusher like that on your team. So I figured he was just worth mentioning.
Okay, here are the other names that I consider on this list.
Okay.
Well, I'll ask you this question first. Do you think Devers will be on this list?
No.
3 years from now, do you think we'll look back and say, like you talk about Schwarber, why the hell did you trade Devers?
No, I don't. I was fine with moving on from Devers. The reasoning behind it can be debated, whatever. I didn't love Devers as a player. I don't like his attitude. I don't like the way he kind of holds and carries himself. It just wasn't for me, so I was fine with them moving on from him. I don't think we'll feel the same kind of regret you feel for a guy like Kyle Schwarber, to be completely honest.
Okay, the other one, and this is a little bit cheating,
okay,
because it's not a player, Bruce Cassidy.
Oh, yeah.
Because I think,
great call.
Obviously, he wins right after.
Immediately. The first season post-Bruins head coaching career, he wins in Vegas.
Yeah, he wins in Vegas. He brings the cup
great
back.
Call.
He trots it around, parades it around Cape Cod for everybody to look at, and calls into this radio station, and he deserved to. Now that it has aged even worse because they had to blow up the whole team because they brought in Jim Montgomery. That fails after a wonderful regular season. Like, they have to move on from that, and then they have Sacco as the interim, and now they're on to another coach. Like, it became very evident that locker room was just at a point where they were dysfunctional. Like, I'm not going like full Rich Keefe over here versus Marchand, but it's clear that Cassidy, the voice in the room, wasn't the main problem.
It was a clear shift in mentality from the front office that we were going to entrust our players with being their own leaders instead of entrusting the coach with leading the players. And they kind of let the, I know the phrase is what, the prisoners run the asylum type mm-hmm. thing. That's kind of what happened here with the firing of Bruce Cassidy. And unfortunately for you, you watched him go and win a cup the very next year.
Do you want to grab a name here before
sure.
we move on?
Sure. Let's go to Phil in New Hampshire's got a name. Go ahead, Phil.
Jeff Bagwell. That trade was horrible. So we got rid of Jeff Bagwell, who went on to be a stud both offensively and defensively. And we got a very, very mediocre relief pitcher in return for Jeff Bagwell. So that was a tough one. And then a point on the Jacoby Myers thing, because I that narrative just kills me. That was the first real collaborative Patriots move. There's a big article on that. It was I forgot who wrote it, but it was about how they really had to convince Bill to let Jacoby Myers go because they wanted yards after catch, and they had to get in. And Juju had a great year yards after catch the year before, and that's what they wanted to do. So that was the beginning of the being collaborative and Bill being forced to be a little more flexible. And I am not a Bill apologist by any stretch of the word, but that Jacoby Myers one sticks in my craw because that article that I read was pretty.
And then also Jeff Bagwell was a Boston native.
Yes. Connecticut guy.
Having a native son. That's rough whenever you move on from him.
It's a tough one. We got a couple suggestions on the text line as well. John Lester.
Oh yeah. That's a really good one. That is a really good one. How do we leave that off? I blame you. I came up with like five names.
Oh, come on. I had three or four, too. Come on. Great topic from the Gen Xer view. Fisk, Lynn, Clemens, Boggs, Burks, and Bagwell.
Wow.
That's a lot of Red Sox.
That person has a lot of trauma from the Boston Red Sox.
The Clemens one makes a lot of sense. I mean, Clemens is just awesome. So anytime you ever let a player of that talent leave is just insane. And then Fisk, Lynn, Boggs, Burks. Okay, I get it.
We hit Chauncey Billups.
Babe Ruth, we weren't going back quite that
Sorry,
far,
we
but
can't
we appreciate
go back that
it.
Far.
OMG, Babe Ruth.
It's just we can't go back 100 years until we get to the segment that we're going to do in an hour, which we're calling Red Sox Killer or Serial Killer.
Oh.
No, I would say maybe Yankees Killer. We're workshopping it.
It's a work in progress. 617-779-7937.
Oh, wait. I got to break the news to
you. This is
about an NFL insider who thinks the Patriots may make
a massive move.
A massive move that's going
to
really upset you.
It has really kind of been bothering me since you mentioned it. We'll get to that next here on Mego and Shime on Boston Sports Original WEEI.